Well, listeners, I'm here with Patricia Knox, nurse practitioner from Upstate and coordinator of palliative care. And I believe you'll find this to be an interesting choice of topics for an Easter Sunday morning. And Pat, what would that be?
This morning, we're going to talk about organ donation and the awareness for the public.
Awareness for the public. And you know, one of the things that I think is really important, and I've written about organ donation on a number of occasions, one of the things I think is really important is making sure your family understands that you are interested in donating your organs. And the reason we wanted to have the conversation with you this morning is because you have personal experience with this, don't you?
I do. As part of my role at work, I sit with families and we talk about these issues at very difficult times. But I have the experience of having one of my relatives be the recipient of lungs.
And talk about that just a little bit, because I think personal stories sometimes motivate us to do things we might not take action otherwise.
Well, thank you. Annie is my niece, and she was diagnosed at birth with cystic fibrosis. She was a beautiful young woman who lived very much happily as she could, attached to oxygen and frequent visits to the hospital. Annie, as her condition deteriorated, became more and more concerned about life and living. She loved horses. Horses were the absolute passion of her life. She was a student at Morrisville, and she wanted to continue her education. She wanted to become the normal person that she hadn't been for her 20-some years of life. So Annie did agree to have a lung transplant. She was put on the list, and she was fortunate enough to receive lungs. And with that gift from some other person, she was able to go on, finish her college education, to do what she wanted to do, to establish her independence, to live life to the fullest.
Fall in love.
Fall in love and have a life that she'd always dreamed of.
That is just an incredible gift from someone to Annie that gave her a life that she had never experienced before.
Exactly. And our family was so appreciative of that, and Annie was so appreciative of that. It was such a wonderful blessing to see someone who didn't have to carry her oxygen with her, who felt the freedom and the normalcy that most of us want to experience in our lives.
And most of us who have it don't appreciate what it means to someone who doesn't have it. And, you know, that takes us to the whole idea of this being a gift. I mean, there are many things we could talk about, the clinical aspects of organ donation and what the experience is. But to me, this is about recognizing that there is a point where our bodies are no longer functioning to keep us alive, but certain parts of us could function and actually keep someone else not just alive, but give them an incredible quality of life. And that's what this gift is.
Absolutely. And we don't think of it in those terms. And it's something that's what us at Upstate who are working with this group want to help others realize, and to have conversations with your family members and to talk about this, that, you know, when the time comes that I will no longer be alive, then what gifts can I give to somebody else? What legacy can I leave?
Exactly. And I think that legacy is an interesting part of it. And, you know, I remember we were here with Dr. Amy Friedman, who's a kidney transplant specialist. And she told us that in most countries of the world, most industrialized, rich nations of the world, transplant is the default when you die. If you have body parts that are still usable and functionable for other people, then they will be transplanted. And then if you want to opt out of that, that's what you have to do. In our country, the default is not to donate. So we have to take an active step to make sure that people know we want to donate our organs. How do we do that?
Well, there is now the opportunity to go online to the New York State Health Department, and there is a consent registry. So people have had the opportunity before to put on their driver's license that they would like to be organ donors. But now we have a new law that's called first-person consent. So I have the opportunity to go, fill out the paperwork, get it signed, and show that my wishes are, if I have any organs or any opportunity to give some gift of life to someone else, that that's my choice. It then doesn't fall to my healthcare proxy. It then doesn't fall to my family, who unfortunately at a time is pretty tragic to be talking about these issues. It's so much better if we can make the decision, share it
right
with our family, and then sign sign the paperwork.
Yeah. When emotions get in the way, that's when it becomes difficult. So by doing it ahead of time, you remove that whole level of emotion. I know that there are some objections that people give, and some of those objections turn out to not be true. I mean, I've heard people say that they can't donate for religious purposes, but that's not really true, is it?
No, absolutely not. Any religious organizations that I'm aware of, it's not a problem. I spoke to someone of the religious persuasion just recently, and that person felt that giving her organs was going to be the way that she would be able to have a legacy for
which
others.
I thought was interesting because in a case where someone doesn't have children, for instance, then this is a way that they do leave a physical legacy of who they were and what they did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Can all organs be donated?
No, and that depends on the person's situation. So in terms of where they are, as far as physically, there has to be an evaluation what physical status the person has. If someone has cancer or some disease that's affecting their organs, they may not be able to be donated. But again, we leave that determination up to the experts.
Exactly.
Our coordinators here are very much experts and are very up to date on what organs can be donated given the circumstances. I know you just were discussing about, you know, the people who come in trauma situations.
Sure.
So all that gets evaluated.
It does. And if anybody's going to leave a decision, leave the decision based on I'd like to donate and let somebody else determine whether or not you're the right person.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Patricia Knox, NP and coordinator of palliative care. We'll get all your titles in there. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up, a life lesson from my 93-year-old mom, or how does she do that? Well, dear listeners, a psychologist friend of mine once said to me, if you see someone succeeding at something and you want the same result, watch what he or she does that you don't and do it. Okay, sounds simple enough, right? Well, at 93, not surprisingly, my mom often goes from one doc to another. Tuesday, I took her to a specialist she saw last maybe 4 or 5 years ago. What happened next amazed me. The nurse calls for her in the waiting room and comes over and says, "Hi, nice to see you again, Lita. Do you remember me? We met a few years ago when you were here last." "No, sweetie, I don't remember you." And in a few seconds, they're going arm in arm into the office. And doesn't another nurse see her and zip over and say, "Hi, how are you? Do you remember me from a few years ago?" And then all three start delightedly chatting for a few moments. By now, I'm getting a little jealous. I thought, I wish more people would treat me that way. And I'd like more of that delighted time with my mom, too. I could have dismissed it, explained it away as related to things out of my control, as we often do, like her being literally a cute little old lady. But not all elderly people get that response. So I thought about what she does. And some simple but powerful things. She makes great eye contact. And she listens. Well, not so much to me sometimes, but she smiles often, and she's right there with a genuine thank you very much. And I had to admit, I'm often rushing to get from this meeting or this task to another. So when I added it all up, she, and the nurses for that matter too, were naturally taking the time to make real contact, like they were at least as important to each other as the task we were all there to do. Maybe it really is that simple. I'm going to keep watching and learning so I can have more fun with my mom now. And when I'm 93, hopefully I'll also have the nurses waltzing me into the inevitable examining rooms. In the meantime, I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill, leaving us with the musical question. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64 or 93? Thanks for tuning in.